face felt sick to his stomach. He had wished futilely that he'd been wrong, but Lara had confirmed it. A sudden fear struck him. He looked at his comm board. He was now set to squad frequency. He'd spoken last to Lara on an open channel. His stomach suddenly got worse. Zonos heard the words, "I know that you're Gara Petethel." Suddenly, he was back there as ally after ally was ripped from the sky by Trigget's pilots and their ambush. The howl that escaped him was no animal noise. It was the wail of a man who just lost everything dear to him, and who suddenly had the destroyer of his happiness in his sights. In spite of calm distortion, the howl made Faces skin crawl. He knew who it had to be, and a glance at his sensor board showed Wraith 3 on an intercept course with Lara. Wedge's voice did not sound amused.
"Wraith 3, this is Leader. Return to your original heading."
Zonos did not deviate from his new course. Face neatly sideslipped his X-Wing behind Lara's. "Wraith 3, hold your fire. If you fire, I'm your primary target." Lara, her voice raspy with pain, said,
"Maybe you ought to let him shoot me, sir. Get out of the way."
"Shut up, too." Face's sensor board howled, a new noise, the distinctive wail signifying a proton torpedo launch. Zonos had fired. "Wraith 3, detonate your torp now." Face made no effort to keep alarm out of his voice. He maintained his position immediately behind Lara's X-Wing and put all available power to his rear shields. He kept his free hand on his ejection lever. "Detonate, damn it!" The universe behind Face filled with bright blue fire. His stern shuddered as though he'd been rammed, and his cockpit was suddenly filled with smoke, the howl of damage alert sirens, and the rumble and tremble of failing vehicle systems. But he was still alive. Either the proton torpedo had detonated at the very outer edges of his rear shields, or Zonos had detonated it prematurely, barely prematurely. Bitter anger swelled within him. "Congratulations, Three," he said. "I may be your newest kill." Zonos jerked upright in his cockpit, confusion clearing from his mind like smoke sucked into hard vacuum. On his sensor screen, Wraith 1 was maneuvering erratically as 2 continued on the straight-line course she'd been assigned.
"Faith, 1, I'm sorry."
He tried to regain control of his voice, his thoughts.
"Hold tight, I'm coming in for a flyover. I'll check external damage."
The shrill tone of an enemy targeting lock assailed his ears. That and Tycho's voice, hard and cold as Zonos had ever heard it.
"Abort that maneuver, Wraith 3.
There was no questioning the deadly seriousness of Tycho's tone.
"Wraith 1, do you copy?"
Face's words were almost drowned by the cockpit alarms from his damaged numb fighter.
"I read, Rogue 2. My fighter's holding together for the moment."
"Good. Wraith 2, swing back around and form up with the group." There was a perceptible delay. Then Lara's voice came back, strained, but not racked with pain as it had been moments ago. "That's an order, Wraith 2. A direct order."
"I've already surrendered once,"
she said.
"And have subsequently been fired on by an officer of this group. I no longer have any faith that I'll survive long enough to meet a court-martial."
"Wraith 2, this is Rogue Leader. You know you'll make it now. The situation is under control."
"What I know is that you don't believe me,"
Lara said.
"You don't believe that I'm a loyal Wraith."
Wedge abandoned the formality of call numbers. "Lara, if what you're saying is the truth, the court will bear you out."
"But that's it for me with the race. I'll never be able to fly with you again. Never."
"You're probably right, Lara. That's the way it is. Now, come around." When her voice returned, it was not Wedge she addressed.
"Wraith 1, can you hear me?"
Face's voice was strong. He'd obviously taken steps to quiet the sirens in his cockpit. "I read you, Sue."
"I want you to understand something. I don't care if you understand it now. I want you to understand it later. I have never betrayed the Wraiths. I will never, ever betray the Wraiths. Do you read me?"
"I hear what you say." A moment later, she said,
"Lynn?"
Donos jolted. He opened his mouth to answer, but he didn't know whom he'd be talking to.
Lara, the woman he'd wanted to come to love, or Gara, the woman he'd sworn and now attempted to kill.
Men?
He sat there, paralyzed by indecision, and did not answer. Lara's X-Wing leaped out of sight and off the sensors as it made the jump into hyperspace. Donos entered Wedge's office and stood at attention. Wedge let him remain that way. It had been a very few months ago that Donos had entered one of his offices for the very first time, remaining stiffly at attention just like this. "Yes," Wedge said.
"I have come to formally resign my commission. It's my only possible course of action."
Wedge waited, but Donos didn't elaborate.
"Why?"
"I do not believe I was in my right mind when I fired upon Flight Officer Notso. I can't even remember doing that. I have performed acts that are an embarrassment to this unit, and that will inevitably result in the end of my flying career. I feel that it is best to end it myself, without further inconvenience to you or to the unit."
Wedge regarded him steadily. "Yes, this was just like the first time, with Donus' true thoughts hidden behind the mask of his face, kept rigidly at bay by his personal discipline."
Wedge sighed.
"You said that you didn't remember having fired, so how do you know you fired deliberately?"
Donos frowned. "My assumption that I fired deliberately comes because such an act is completely in keeping with my mental state whenever I thought about what I'd do if I ever had the betrayer of Talon's squadron under my guns."
"Tell me, based on your memories, not what's consistent with your feelings prior to this event, did you deliberately fire on Lara Notzel?"
"I don't know."
"Did you deliberately disobey the orders of a superior officer?"
"I don't know."
"Very well. I'm going to put the incident down as accidental discharge of a weapons system for the time being. That's the way it goes in the record until an investigation determines otherwise."
Wedge paused for a moment, considering.
"Whom have you discussed this with in order to improve the situation?"
Donos looked away, struggling to keep distress off his face.
"No one, sir."
"That's the responsibility you've dodged. Now, either you're fit to fly or you're not. How do we find out?"
I guess I talk to the medics."
"Talk to one of your squad mates first. Venting whatever pressure is in you is easier to survive if it's done in atmosphere rather than in vacuum. And then talk to the medics. You're off the active flying roster until someone can tell me whether you're fit to fly. And you're not the person to tell me."
Finally, Donos looked at him.
"Understood, sir."
"You did one thing right today, Donos. You probably don't even know it. Your flight recorder and your astromech both indicate that you detonated your torpedo before it hit Captain Lauren."
"I don't remember that either."
"But it's one thing that stands between you and my instant acceptance of your resignation. Dismissed."
Donos rose and saluted. The expression on his face was a glum one. But, Wedge reflected, at least it was an expression. She was drifting in pain and knew that she did not want to awaken, but something would not let her sleep. She opened her eyes. She was suspended within a Bacta tank, and the pain she felt suggested she was going to be there for some time to come. But a female technician with a perky smile was outside gesturing for her to rise to the top, so she gave a few feeble kicks and floated up through the cloying liquid. When she broke the surface, a hand, a male hand, reached down to help disengage the breather unit from her face. When her vision cleared, she recognized the Twi'lek lawyer, Nawara Venn.
"Dr. Gast," he said, "I have an offer for you. 500,000 credits. Amnesty for all crimes to which you provide confession and full details, and a new identity. Quite easy to manage, as you are already officially dead. Only a couple of medics and 3 officers know you're still alive. But this offer is only valid If you can tell us, among other things, the biological signs and markers that indicate when someone has been subjected to Zinge's brainwashing techniques. Gast let a slow smile spread across her features. My, you have been doing your research.
"We'll keep today's meeting short," Webb said. He looked out over his audience of pilots, trying to gauge their mood. They were quiet, few wisecracks, little banter. A bad sign. Morale was low. "A recent attempt by a Sulliston pilot to crash a luxury liner onto Coruscant was thwarted by a fellow Sulliston officer. An attempt also on Coruscant by a Bothan Civil Services employee to cause an explosion at a power center was thwarted by his supervisor. Though officially both incidents were prevented by fellow workers, unofficially they were prevented by New Republic Intelligence, who were following the blueprint we sent them for Zinge's operations. General Kraken sends his personal congratulations to the members of Wraith Squadron and Rogue Squadron who participated in our prediction sessions." He nodded toward Dia Pasek. "Dia, you're back on duty." "That's not good enough," Faith said. "I know," Webb said. "But, Dia, it's up to you. Do you want to fly?"
"I'll fly," she said. "I want my shot at Zinge."
"Good. Because we have a heavy schedule ahead of us. Among our new weapons is a lot of data about the way Zinge moves into a system currently in enemy hands and acquires control of businesses there. On Zinge-held worlds, we'll be making strikes against the businesses that have to be providing him with the greatest amounts of money or necessary material." There was more to it than that. Details Wedge couldn't give his pilots. There were no Imperial-held worlds on the task force's hit list because General Solo was forwarding to Admiral Terran Rogris that same information about Zinge's business dealings. And Imperial intelligence would be doing exactly the same thing in Imperial-controlled territories. General Solo and Admiral Rogris, senior officers of two enemy governments, making agreements that would be easy to constitute as treasonous. Wedge had to shake his head over that. It took a menace like Zinge to make temporary allies of two men who would otherwise be bitter opponents. Melvar led Lara into the presence of the warlord like an honored guest. Zinge actually rose as she entered the office, giving her a little formal bow.
"Gera Petifer, so happy to meet you at last."
"You're the warlord?" she said, keeping her voice pert. "I won't try to compete with you in degrees of happiness."
Zinge's smile broadened.
"Very good. She gives me my due, yet steals it back by making her presence the one that induces more happiness. Did you see that, General?"
"I saw." Melvar hovered, standing a meter behind Lara's chair to the left. She forced herself to stay relaxed. She couldn't let him know how tense his presence made her.
"Lieutenant Pettisell, may I call you Gera, at least until we have questions of your employment settled?"
"Please do."
"Gera, we must know."
The general's mobile features took on an expression of sympathy, of worry.
"We dispatched a team to make arrangements for your extraction. We received word several days later that our agent's bodies had been found. What happened?"
Lara offered a little sigh of vexation.
I
traveled in the company of an officer of Wraith Squadron. He was the final member of Talon Squadron, which I helped Admiral Triggett destroy. I thought he was one lingering detail I ought to deal with. But what I didn't know until later is that the idiot had fallen in love with me. He was supposed to stay with the X-Wings. Instead, he followed me. Well, in our opening negotiations, my brother, that is, the real Lara Notzel's brother, drew a blaster, and Lieutenant Donos fired upon him, killing him. Then he finished up by killing your captain. I had to cover up my tracks after that, not attempt any further communications with you for a while, as I was under some scrutiny during the review.
Zinge nodded. "But obviously, you came away clean."
"Oh, yes, for a while. Unfortunately, on Coruscant, one of the Wraiths stumbled across some information on my mother,
who'd been with Imperial Intelligence. With my cover blown, with it now impossible for me to gather any more information for you, I fled.
How did you manage to contact us?
Though Zinge's expression was open, innocent, Lara knew he had to be aware of every fact of the story. Still, she was playing his game by his rules. When my so-called brother contacted me initially, he mentioned a company that might want to employ me. After I was forced to flee Mon Ramonda, I decided to look into that firm in case it was a front for your operations. And it was.
Well, excellent.
Zinge reviewed a screen full of data on his terminal.
Let's jump straight into the dogfight, shall we? I can offer you a commission at the rank of naval lieutenant. You'll be an analyst aboard Iron Fist. Does that suit you?
Lara made her voice a purr. It suits me very well.
The hatch behind Lara opened, and Ensign Gutterweld thrust his face into the flight simulator.
Need any help?
No, thank you.
She was getting sick of the ubiquitous Gutterweld. Except when she was in her quarters on Iron Fist, in the tiny office where she wrote her commentary on her time with Wraith Squadron, or in simulators, Gutterweld was there, her shadow. Gutterweld handed her the pack in which she carried her datapad and other equipment.
Where to now? The cafeteria?
Lara checked her chrono. No, it's late. I think I'll just turn in. As they walked past the banks of control stations set up to monitor the simulators, she saw what she needed. A set of monitor goggles and attached microphone. They lay unguarded on one of the control stations. As she and Gutterweld passed the station, she contrived to get her left foot tangled in his legs. He tripped forward while she stumbled and fell sideways, snatching up the set of goggles and tucking them into her pack as she hit the floor. He scrambled to his feet.
I'm sorry. Are you hurt?
She took the hand he offered and let him half haul her to her feet. She winced as she put her weight on her left leg.
Not your fault. I think I had a cramp from all the time in the simulator.
She maintained the pretense of her limp all the way to the door to her quarters, and inside as well. She wasn't trusted, and with Zinge in charge, that meant there were holocams on her in her quarters. Tonin, her R2 unit, sat in the middle of the bedroom. He was almost a stranger to her now, had been since she'd wiped his memory before boarding Iron Fist. But that would change soon. Once in bed, she deliberately changed position every 2 or 3 minutes, tossing and turning, a show of insomnia for whoever was monitoring her holocams. She did this for an hour. Then she sat up. Tonin beeped a question.
Sorry, but I'm going to need the patch of metal where you're resting. Scoot into the closet, would you?
Lara pulled the mattress from her bed onto the floor, then redistributed pillows and sheets on it. She made sure that one of the sheets reached as far as Tonin's wheels. She reached into the bag in her closet, extracted the monitoring goggles, and scooted them under the edge of the sheet on the floor, then plugged the cord into a jack in Tonin's side. Nearly certain that her body shielded the action from the viewpoint of most of the places holocams might be situated in her room, she slipped under the sheets and pulled them up over her head. With movements almost imperceptibly slow, she drew the monitoring goggles onto her head and turned them on. The goggles, drawing power from the link with Tonin, activated with a faint hum. She whispered,
"Tonin, Aldivian colloquialism. Definition, little atom."
If she was right, if she'd done her work correctly, the passwords she'd just spoken would be causing events to transpire deep within her R2 unit. The extra hardware she had buried within his power unit would be activating. The memory backup it contained would be pouring out across the droid's circuitry, overwhelming Tonin's current programming. A single word, "ready," appeared before her eyes, projected onto the goggles she wore.
"Don't communicate audibly," she whispered, though Tonin's text transmission suggested that he understood the need for secrecy. The fact that all data being transmitted between them was going across a direct wire connection made it very unlikely that her observers would be able to detect their communication.
Before we do anything, I want to apologize for what I've done to you. Anytime anyone but me puts a restraining bolt on you or opens you up, your memory will wipe. It's the only way to keep you safe.
I understand, Lara.
I had an idea as to how we can destroy Iron Fist. You'll have to do most of the work. Zinge is notoriously cheap, which means he probably won't have my quarters monitored when I'm not in them. If I stay away from my quarters all day long, that gives you plenty of time. I'll tell you what you need to do.
Half an hour after Lara's departure from her quarters the next morning, Tonin became active. He opened the door a bare 3 centimeters and extended his video sensor through it nearly at floor level, giving him a 360-degree view of the corridor. It was nearly an hour before his first opportunity arose. One little MSE-6 utility droid, rodent-like in its scurrying motion and nervousness, was alone, unobserved. Tonin snapped his heavy grappler arm out through the gap and snared the little droid. He popped open the access hatch on the droid's underside and extended his scomp link into the opening. New programming flooded its tiny brain. Melvar appeared silently beside Lara's station. Baron Fell would like to see you fly. Broadax Squadron will be supplementing the 181st, and they're a pilot light. Lara made a face suggesting that she was surprised and pleased.
I'd be delighted.
Report to their ready room at 1300. Melvar gave her a mirthless smile. When he was gone, she stared at her screen, seeing none of the data on it, and tried not to shake. She might be about to face her former squadmates in mortal combat. General Solo, Captain Onoma, and Wedge were already in the briefing room when Donos arrived. Within a minute, they were joined by Shala and Face. "This meeting concerns Lara Notso," Wedge said. "Earlier today, the falsehood was fired upon by Lara Notso, who was acting as a TIE interceptor pilot for Zinj's forces. Every time she hit us with laser fire, our comm unit stored fragments of a transmission. She had apparently rigged one of her laser cannons to pulse in the fashion of a line-of-sight laser communicator. Here's the message. It's voice only." Wedge reached over to the terminal keyboard beside the conference table and pressed a button.
"This is Lara Notso, transmitting to Wraith Squadron and Mon Ramonda."
Donos tensed. Knowing that the message was from her hadn't prepared him for actually hearing her voice. He felt almost as though he'd been physically struck. Then he became aware of Shala's gaze on him. Faces, too. They were evaluating him, his reaction. Once, he would have washed all expression away from his face, giving them nothing to read. But he didn't care about that anymore. It hurt to hear Lara. It didn't matter if they could see the bleakness of his expression. He closed his eyes to listen more carefully.
"I was the one who suggested to the warlord that he'd encountered you at Compin 5. If you are listening to this message, that means that you did show up there. I hope you did that because it's part of your mission plan, that you were hoping to engage him. I told him you might also appear at Vahaba. You might want to keep that on your schedule. You should be able to engage him there as well."
Donos opened his eyes to glance at Solo and Wedge. They were exchanging a look, and Solo shook his head, a trace of confusion to his expression.
"Please, tell the Wraiths that I'm holding faith with them."
There was a long pause, the distinct sound of Lara swallowing with difficulty.
"The rest of this message is from Indonos."
Wedge tapped a key on the terminal and her voice cut off. He looked apologetically at Donos. "I'm sorry, I've heard it already, and it does pertain to her state of mind. We're all going to have to hear it." Donos nodded, not trusting himself to speak. Wedge tapped the key again. But Lara didn't speak for several seconds. Then,
"It's not likely that we'll ever see one another again. So I wanted to take this opportunity to say goodbye. Well, more than that. reasons I wanted to explain about what I did. I was fighting a war the way I'd been trained. And that involved infiltrating the enemy and getting their secrets back to my superiors. Then, I infiltrated Wraith Squadron. Just a ploy to make myself more valuable to prospective employers. And things started happening. All the furniture that made up the way I'd thought and felt about things all my life started coming loose in my head.
There was a waver to her voice now, a suggestion she was having trouble keeping it under control.
A lot of the time, I don't know who I am anymore. But I know what I have to do. Whoever I am, I'm staying here like a vibroblade right next to Finch's vitals. And when the right time comes, I'm going to stab him deep. That'll probably be the last thing I do.
There was a long silence. Her voice finally returned, quieter than it had been.
I wish I'd been someone else to give you that chance you wanted. Lara Noxo out.
Donos felt his eyes burning. He put his hand over them. He felt tears under his fingers. They were silent a long moment. Then Wedge, regret in his voice, said, "All right. Opinions. Chala?" Chala cleared her throat.
Tough call, but she seems to be sticking to her plan. To her perception that Zinj is the enemy. And if I read her words right, she's resigned herself to death in this effort. That makes it more likely that her words can be trusted. Add to that the very interesting way she transmitted data. It was complicated. It was unreliable. It was a desperation measure. If she really was an agent of Zinj's, she could have just shot us a tight beam transmission from her interceptor's comm system. We would have known that there was very little chance of such a message being detected. The approach she actually used suggests to me that she's afraid that her interceptor's comm system is tapped, and she wanted to get around whatever measures have been taken that way.
All right. Face?
There was a lot of what seemed like very genuine strain in her voice. I'd lean toward the side of her telling the truth.
Donos?
Decorum demanded that he look at them when he answered. If he did that, they'd see his tears. They'd know he wasn't in control of himself. They'd know... Well, to hell with what they knew. He slammed his hand down on the tabletop, defying them to say anything about the tears on his cheeks. "She was telling the truth," he said.
"I need a little more than that," Wedge said.
"Your reasons?"
"That final bit."
He took a deep, shuddery breath. "If she had wanted to manipulate me, to make me come in on her side, she'd have said, 'If I get out of this alive, I'll come back to stand trial.' That gives me everything, puts everything on me. If I just want justice, I win. She stands trial. If I want her, I win. I stand beside her at her trial, and I can dream that she'll get off light. That's the way to swing me over. But she didn't do that. She just said goodbye." Wedge nodded.
"All right. There you go, General. Three opinions, all in the same direction, for different reasons."
Solo leaned back.
"Rahaba," he smiled. "If we can get the falsehood repaired fast enough, we can dangle it like bait for Zinj again."
Lara could almost feel the stare of Tonin's holocam eye on her. It seemed to sense the way her spirits lowered as she reviewed the data they were receiving from the droid they'd assigned to a secret chamber Tonin had detected on Iron Fist. She didn't get into the worst of it in the summary she recorded for Mon Ramonda. The attached data file would give the New Republic the most gruesome details. Project Chubar involves chemical treatments and a teaching regimen to bring a humanoid's mental functions up to those of human average, sometimes higher. In the case of creatures that are already intelligent, for instance, Ewoks, the process enhances mental traits that bring its type of intelligence more in line with the humans. Less reliance on sensory data and more on analysis, for instance. Project Minefield derived from Chubar. It involves a second and much faster-acting set of chemical treatments that affect the victim's mind on a much shorter-term basis. While the chemicals are at their maximum effect, Zinge's agents can implant a delusion and a mission in the victim's mind. The delusion is usually that some awful situation is in effect and can't be stopped until the mission is accomplished. Both the delusion and the mission are associated with a trigger, usually a code phrase. Until the phrase is used, the victim is unaware of what has been done to him. But when the phrase is used, the mission pops to the top and becomes the victim's number one priority. Lara scrolled through screens of data on her terminal. Project Funeral is Zinge's major operation using the minefield technique. Our brainstorming session pretty much nailed its purpose and intent, fomenting suspicion between the humans and non-humans of the New Republic. I'm going to do what I can for the test subjects on Iron Fist. I'll end their suffering, one way or another. End session. She switched off the recording and leaned back in her chair. The non-humans in their cages deep in Iron Fist's belly were beginning to haunt her dreams. She leaned forward again. What's our situation with the hyperdrive? Words popped up on her screen. We have units in place all over the engines. They can begin their sabotage at any time. But there are not yet enough in critical positions for us to be certain that they can disable the hyperdrive. Keep pouring on resources, she said. We have to be able to bring those engines down when we want to. The document on Wedge's screen was labeled Routine Examination, but Wedge knew it to be anything but. It was a fitness report, the accumulated conclusions of Mon Ramonda's most experienced medics and analysts about Mindonos. The document contained the kind of database torpedo that could sink a career. But one party hadn't voted yet, and that was Wedge's gut instinct. A knock sounded on Wedge's door. Come, he said. Donos entered, saluted. Reporting as ordered, sir. His expression was somber, but was not the rigid mask Wedge remembered from most of their earlier interviews. Lieutenant, I've asked you in here to find out what role you'd like to play in the Vahaba mission. If I could do anything I wanted, I'd be back in my X-Wing. That's where I feel I belong. And if you were ordered to fire on Lara Nutzel, I'd do it. I've sworn an oath to the New Republic to hold its needs above my own. And if you killed her, what would you do then? I don't know, sir. Donus's eyes lost focus as they stared off into the distance. I don't know who I'd be then, sir. Fair enough. Wedge regarded the lieutenant for a moment. This wasn't the Donos he'd met several months before. Not a man whose every worry, every crisis was kept bottled up inside. Wedge typed a few words into his terminal and sent the file on to the ship's central computer. Donos, I'm certifying you fit to fly. You'll be back with the Wraiths at Vahaba. The starfield outside their cockpits was brilliant, unchanging. Sick of it yet? Faith asked his temporary wingman, Rund.
We are growing absolutely sick of it, Faith.
They cruised at sublight speeds at what would be considered the boundary of the Vahaba system.
New contact. Course 13 degrees. Down 82.
Runt's voice was suddenly crisp, professional. Faith shut down most of his vehicle systems and visually scanned the area of space Runt had indicated. A minute's worth of careful panning and searching yielded the target. A group of four ships in close formation. The smallest of them was too tiny to identify by class. But the other three were not. Three Star Destroyers. One of them an ancient Victory class, one an Imperial class, and the other... We have her, Faith said. Iron Fist. The news hit Mon Ramonda's bridge like a concussion missile. Solo came up out of his chair and began issuing orders. Captain Anoma did the same. A low, unsettling rumble filled the bridge. Solo felt the hair on his arms and the back of his neck rise.
He swung around to see Chewbacca standing in the doorway, his expression happy, uttering the jubilant hunting call.
That's right, Chewie, he said. It's our best shot yet.
Boots clattered on the command walkway overhead, and Lara saw Zinge and Melbar running forward toward the main bow viewport. Zinge skidded to a sudden stop halfway there, and Melbar nearly crashed into him. It was obvious that Zinge could see the enemy with the naked eye. They were close.
Return to original course,
Zinge shouted. His face was red.
Prepare for hyperspace. Signal the group. Inform groups 2 and 3. Tell them our situation and instruct them to stand by to jump to the abort rendezvous locations.
Lara nudged the technician next to her. Why is he running? She asked. They outnumber us, but they couldn't possibly destroy us before the rest of our fleet jumps in. The technician gave her a look of scorn. Zinge's doctrine, he said. No matter what the odds look like, if the enemy has chosen the battleground, he has more resources than we're aware of. It becomes imperative to choose a new battlefield, one the enemy can't have prepared. Don't mistake that for cowardice.
I never would have, sir.
Lara sat upright. Maybe she could get Zinge to abandon his fleet, jump and leave them behind. Just a minor course correction would be all it would take. Then, wherever he emerged, she could shut down his hyperdrive and summon Solo's fleet for the kill. She switched her terminal over to direct communication with Tonin and plugged her goggles in.
Has Iron Fist already transmitted its jump course to the rest of the fleet? She asked.
Yes.
Can you enter a course correction? I don't mean enter it as a new course. They'd notice that. I mean, like an automated minor correction as the nav computer continues to process new data.
Yes.
Is there a star within range of the kind of variation you can enter?
Yes. Selagus. Just within Zinge-controlled space.
Do it.
Done. We are now bound for Selagus.
Tonin, you are wonderful.
She lifted her goggles and glanced right and left, making sure that the analysts on either side of her were fully occupied with their tasks. Then she began recording. Solo watched as Iron Fist became a single streak of light leaping out into space. A moment later, the destroyer was gone. Only the battered-looking cruiser that had been hugging her belly remained. And a second later, it disappeared as well.
I can't beat him,
Solo said. He heaved a sigh. Then his communications officer said, Sir, we're receiving holocom traffic.
That'll be Zinge, Solo said, calling to brag.
No, sir. Long before she was supposed to, Iron Fist dropped out of hyperspace. Zinge leaned over to bellow down at his navigator.
Just how incompetent are you? How far did we travel?
Less than 8 light years, sir.
Well, get us into hyperspace and get us to our rendezvous point.
Sir?
Another voice, the officer in charge of engineering.
New damage reports. We're experiencing a progressive failure in our hyperdrive system.
Zinge felt his gut turn cold.
Define progressive failure.
Primary subsystems are shut down, and secondary systems and optional reroutes are failing. But it's not instantaneous. It's spreading like a disease.
How long before the system is inoperable?
1 minute, maybe 2.
Navigation, how long before we can make our next jump?
The navigator looked up and slowly shook his head.
Fix it,
Zinge said.
Now!
We have a holocom message,
called the communications officer.
Directed to whom?
Zinge asked.
I don't know, sir. It's not to us. It's from us.
I didn't authorize... Oh, Melvar. We're in trouble. Communications, put that message up where I can see it.
The holo-projected status board was replaced by a face. That of Gara Pettifell.
General Solo,
the woman said.
If everything has gone correctly, Iron Fist is now in the Selagus system with her hyperdrive inoperable. Other portions of Zinge's fleet are continuing on to their rendezvous point and won't be able to get to him for a little while. Minutes in some cases, hours in others. I recommend you come by and take a look. Oh, bring your fleet, too. Lara Nazzo out.
The image faded. Zinj turned to Melvar.
Dispatch, security. Have her found and brought to the interrogation chamber.
He took a deep breath.
I intend for her death to be so horrible that it will give me nightmares.
Zinj turned his attention to the stern-faced captain of Iron Fist.
Zilla, bring in second death. We may actually have to use her in her primary role. Find a good spot in this system for us to hide until our reinforcements arrive, or our hyperdrive is fixed.
He took a deep breath to calm himself.
And prepare all our starfighters to launch. We're in for a fight.
Mon Ramonda and the New Republic fleet dropped out of hyperspace well within the Salagas system. The hollow image showed them a gradually lengthening line of ships headed toward a distinct yellow-orange world. Solo ran the numbers through his head.
If they join up with Iron Fist, they will outgun us,
Captain Anoma said, confirming Solo's calculations. But not by an impossible amount, Solo said.
We'll just have to be better than they are.
Leaving Tonin behind, Lara stepped out of the turbo lift onto a deck of Iron Fist that wasn't supposed to exist. She'd only seen it through holocam recordings taken by utility droids. The first chamber she passed was the one she thought of as the zoo. In it were a couple of monitoring consoles and an entire wall of metal and transparasteel cages stacked three high. Most of the cages still seemed to be full. Then the office. Within it, two men, medical technicians. She punched the combination Tonin had given her into the door keypad. The door slid open. The two technicians brightened.
A new liaison officer?
Asked one. Lara looked between them.
You two are the most vomitously despicable creatures I think I've ever met.
From where she'd tucked it into her belt at her back, she drew her blaster.
Take me to the containment chamber, she said. Or I'll kill you.
In moments, she was in the largest chamber, her prisoners standing splayed against one blank wall while she examined the cages. Inside the nearest was an Ewok.
Do you understand basic? She asked.
It nodded, its motion quick and very human. Its eyes looked like those of an Ewok, but possessed an understanding that was unsettling.
I'm going to free you and get you off this ship. So you can go home or live where you please. Would you like that?
It nodded. The lock on the cage was simple, mechanical. She lifted it, and the Ewok emerged. The creature looked at the medics and uttered a low, rolling growl. Then, to Lara's discomfiture, it spoke, its voice rising and falling in a sing-song that did not belong to any basic dialect she'd ever heard.
I will kill them.
No, she said. You will go to each cage. Ask each prisoner if it will refrain from attacking me if it is freed. Tell it that I will get them all off this ship. Then free the ones who agree. The Ewok looked up at her, so obviously considering her command and his other options, that Lara could almost see a strategic program running behind his eyes. Then he shrugged like a human and moved to the next cage.